Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT News team.
Good afternoon. I'm Maggie Wall, and I have a group of very interesting people with me today. Not that we don't always have interesting, but this is a subject I find fascinating, and I'm sure a lot of us do. Earthquakes, tsunamis, disasters. We're kind of all of that mind here in Kodiak. And we're actually probably a lot smarter about these things than most people are. So we're talking about, actually, I'm going to let Jack Maker from the borough explain what we're all talking about here today. Thanks, Jack.
Oh, you betcha, Maggie. We're here today with, I'm going to try to pronounce the names, Dmitry Nikolsky and Elena Suleimani. And I did pretty good there. They're with the Geophysical Institute with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and they've been putting together new tsunami inundation maps based on all that has been learned between now and even the 64 earthquake. You know, we've had these big tsunamis, and they're here to give some presentations to the public tonight at the City Council work session at 7:30 in the public library. They will be giving a public presentation at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, and they'll be giving a presentation to the Borough Assembly at their meeting at 6:30 p.m. in the school district conference room. And the presentation's about how our tsunami inundation zone has changed, as well as how long it actually takes a person to walk out of the inundation zone to certain safety checkpoints. And with that, I'll leave that description brief and we can talk more about it.
That sounds good. And I'm going to write myself a note here. Safety checkpoints. I've never heard that phrase used before. So I guess I'll ask you.
I would say they're safety exit points. I could let Dmitry talk to that, but it's basically the closest point to exit the inundation zone and get into the safe zone.
Got it. So that is a new word. I've never heard it before, used with tsunamis. Okay, so let's start over here on my left, as I usually do. I'll have everybody introduce me so that you can all, at home or driving in your car or whatever you're doing, listening to us, you'll know who's who. So, Elena first.
Yes, my name is Elena Suleimani. I work at the Geophysical Institute in Fairbanks as a tsunami scientist. I am a part of a tsunami group that makes tsunami inundation maps for the state of Alaska.
A tsunami scientist, I like that. And Dmitry?
Hi, I'm Dmitry Nikolsky, and thank you for having me on the radio. And I work at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for about 10 years, and we do tsunami inundation maps with Yelena for different communities. And for example, Dutch Harbor, Sitka, Juneau. And here we present an updated tsunami inundation map for the city of Kodiak and Woman's Bay.
Now, do you have one now, or you're putting one together?
So we already published it, and Elena was the first author on the inundation map, and the report is now published, and it's online, and everyone can Google it on internet, and they can should be able to see inundation map. And here we are working on the evacuation map, and the evacuation map is how people should go away from a hazard and how long it's going to take time for people to walk away from a hazard zone.
Now that's going to be very interesting. I never think about it, but you know, if you're trying to get out with your car, you're going to get crowded, but if you're walking, you got to give your, and it's all uphill too from here, so there's a little bit of extra effort going out there. We also have Jim, Mr. Big
Mulligan.
He's actually the fire chief. But I understand that you are the emergency services coordinator.
Yes, ma'am. I'm also the emergency service coordinator for the city of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough Road System. I oversee the training of the EOC staff, the emergency operations staff, who stand up to respond to these incidents, as well as facilitate updates to our plans that we're dealing with now. And I'm also the chairman of the local emergency planning commission.
Okay, so when I'm thinking of what you might be doing, if we had a disaster, okay, say we have an earthquake and people are doing things, you'd be there at the police department, right? That's where that center is?
Right, that's where the emergency operations center is now.
And so you would be coordinating like the field work, the people out in the field and listening and who's doing what, so that the person, the borough manager is, I don't even know who makes these decisions anymore.
The city manager is actually the emergency service director. In his absence, I take over his position. But our primary responsibility in the emergency operations center is to coordinate the community response to one of these large-scale incidents. So it deals with dispatching police, fire, public works, how do we get people move from an area of high danger to an area of low danger, like we did for the Chinook wildfire. Dispatch buses out to move residents through. It's basically the coordination center. It's also the primary contact to the state emergency operations center. So that way, when one of these incidents overwhelms our ability to deal with it because of our limited resources, we're the contact point to the state to access their resources.
Got it. So yes, so you do a lot of coordinating with everybody. Okay. And then we're back to Jack. We already know Jack. Jack's from the borough.
Yep. From the borough.
And then here's what we have here. You can't see her because you're not on radio, but I can't see her either because she's around the corner here. But Janelle from the borough is a map maker. Janelle.
Hi, yes. I'm Janelle Day. I work with the GIS and mapping for Kodiak Island Borough. And for the purposes of this presentation, I will be working with Elena and Dimitri and the emergency response personnel, I guess, in developing the evacuation map that will be distributed to the public here. And so we're going to try to get that out to as many people as possible. And it's more just to help people prepare for an event should it happen.
Do you have a time frame on that?
Jack?
Are we talking this year, next year, six months, three
I would
months?
Say hopefully before the end of the first quarter of next year. It's a pretty big project, and we want to present it on the website for public comment. We want to present it to local emergency planning committee for their input, and once we have what we feel is a good product, we will forward that to the Kodiak Emergency Services Council, and we will actually ask them to adopt the map. We have, since in the almost nine years I've been with the borough, we've had nothing but draft evacuation maps, so we're kind of riding the wave, so to say, of our last warning, and we want to keep that momentum going and start being better prepared.
That sounds good. Now, I have here, I picked this up at the library, the Kodiak Area Emergency Preparedness Guide. So when you're talking about maps and in inundation areas, I'm thinking you'd have a map in here, but we really don't. But I remember that there is something kind of online that gives you an idea. This, though, I think basically we all know, it's like Pam had said during the evacuation on KMXT, stay calm and get as high as you can. You know, that serves us all well, but we really probably should have a better system. And I'm glad to see that you guys are all working on that. That's nice, especially since I understand, and Dimitri's going to explain this, I understand that we're more aware that the 100-foot mark isn't really the best move. Anyway, so I have this Kodiak Emergency Preparedness Guide. It's green, at least my cover is green, and they have them at the library. That's where I got mine.
And if I may, they're also available at the Community Development Department at the borough, and all the hotels have them. And if any business out there, government office, would like a supply of those to put out, I have those.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to go back to Dimitri, who is going to tell us about what are we changing and why are we changing? What did we learn? Why are we doing this? You're going to lean into the mic just a little bit.
That's a big, interesting question you're asking.
And, could you make it like small and simple?
Or maybe could you mention how long the story is that the first Kodiak map was actually made back in 2000?
2000, yeah.
But since then, many interesting things happened, yeah.
Okay, so...
So in 2000, Yelena produced the first inundation map for the city of Kodiak, and it was mostly based on a repeat of 1964 earthquake. And now the science of a tsunami has progressed over the recent 10 years. So we had the devastating effects of Tohoku earthquake in Japan in 2011.
Now, I'm going to interrupt here just for a second because what is that called and how do you spell it?
Tohoku, T-O-H-O-K-U.
And then I think a lot of people associate that with the Fukushima incident. Okay, just making sure that that's what people understand what we're talking about. Okay.
So, and then it happened that people were preparing in Japan for smaller earthquakes. And they didn't, they did a good job, but they didn't consider all possible scenarios back then. So they designed the seawalls smaller, they designed evacuation inundation zone smaller. And since then, science progressed and we started to consider bigger earthquakes, which might be possible. And we recently we updated the inundation map in Kodiak, which earthquakes which can happen offshore of Kodiak, which are different from the 1964 earthquake. And this resulted in an inundation line which went further inland than previously thought. We want to be the communities on a safer side. And then we not only had considered historical events, but we consider the prehistorical events which happened before the humans.
Right. And so are we looking... You say we have more science. I guess, how is it we know that there could be bigger ones? Or just we know it's possible for there to be bigger ones?
Yeah, we know that there are, that people went and were digging in areas, low-lying areas, and they were finding different traces of the previous tsunamis, which were coming to the Kodiak and to the nearby islands. So, and then the people estimated, the scientists, people, geologists estimated that tsunamis come to the Kodiak with a recurrence time of about 300 years, or give it a take. But we don't know when the next earthquake might be coming to the shore.
Right. Okay. So that's kind of like when you hear people talk about the 100-year flood or the 100-year storm. You hear that on the news a lot when they're talking about the continental United States, you know. This is the... and. So that's what you're saying. Kodiak has like a 300-year tsunami. No, not really. Everybody's nodding their heads. No, Maggie.
Well, okay, hang on. Bring up the 300-year stuff and the 100-year flood. It's not meaning that we're only going to see one every 100 years. It basically breaks it down into a percentage. So like one out of 100, we could be hit. One out of 300, we could be hit. They just use the year marker to kind of make sense out of it. So... you look down south, Ellicott City, Maryland, got their 100-year flood, and they got three of them within a couple of years of each other. So that's a prime example of, and when you say, well, it's only supposed to happen every 100 years, and it happened down there repetitively year after year. So it doesn't mean that, okay, well, we had one in 64, we don't have to worry about one for another 300 years. No, it's just simply the percentage chances of us getting hit by one. A big threat to us would be the Cascadia fault line off of the northwestern coast of the United States. When that lets go, and that's a very big concern for everyone in the Pacific Rim of the damage that can occur. So that one is, I don't know, it's like one out of 1,000 kind of thing. So we still have to be very concerned with that, much less the near island stuff that we look at.
Got it. But I've never heard of this Cascade fault line. And just so you know, I didn't think it only happens once every 300, just like it's a very rare occasion. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so good. Thanks for clarifying that, because we do hear it that way a lot. And that one place did get a lot of flooding. I remember hearing about that. So what are some of the things we are concerned with here? We've got new guidelines or new parameters for what we think the water could come. And so we're going to adjust the map to bring them current based on that new information. Yes?
Yes. So we adjust the map based on the best available science up to date. So so whatever the science is telling from different areas, from different regions of the world. So we try to bring in to here, to Kodiak, and and to adjust the line based on this information.
Do you think that one of the reasons we have more information is because we have more monitors out there so that when something happens, we're more aware of what's going on? We've got a shaking head over here with Ilana. Okay, so fill me in.
I will just say that since the last two disasters, the one that's in Indian Ocean in 2004 and the Japanese tsunami of 2011, scientists learned a new piece of information about how underwater earthquakes can generate such large waves. So it's not that the magnitude was unexpected. The magnitude of this kind happened before, but the way that the seafloor moved during the earthquake was quite unexpected in the Japanese event. And then scientists suggested that Alaska Aleutian Subduction Zone close to Kodiak has a very similar behavior and structure to the Japanese subduction zone. So that type of earthquake can easily happen here in Kodiak. The fact that we've never had that earthquake before doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. So this kind of earthquake can be here offshore, and it can result in similar inundation zone in Kodiak. So this new piece of information was included in the new map of Kodiak that we updated recently. And I need to say that Kodiak actually was the first community in the state of Alaska tsunami program that started in 1998, because Kodiak was very involved in the tsunami preparedness back then, and it has great infrastructure, lots of tourism, and again, the very involved population. And that's why Kodiak was, again, the first community to update the existing map. So you guys are pioneers in two different ways here. So the new updated map, you get it first. So I hope that product will serve it well.
Good deal. So how do you draw this map? Janelle, you're over here, but do you have a computer that kind of spits out like this is this many feet and this many metric things and this many whatevers? And then she translates it into a super simple map.
Exactly. That's how you're saying. We consider different scenarios, different earthquake scenarios, local to Kodiak. So, and then we use a big computer, and then it's crunching numbers and it's modeling how the wave and how it propagates and how it goes in the ocean around the islands and comes into the harbor. So, and then we, after considering about a dozen of those scenarios, from 10 to 20 different scenarios, we put all of them on top of each other and we draw the envelope of the of the potential flooding zone. And this is what we're presenting to the city, this envelope.
I like that phrase, envelope. Mm-hmm. And so I recall, as you had in the announcement, you're going to tell us how long it takes to get from someplace downtown out of the envelope. So give me an example. Let's say you're down shopping on the mall, because everybody knows exactly where the mall is. Well, say the Harbor Master's office, that area. Say you're down there. How long does it take to get away and get into what we would call high ground?
So what we're doing is that we have a road network coming from Janelle, and so we put all these roads on the envelope, which is the same thing as a hazard zone. Mm-hmm. And we can trace the distance from the harbor to this boundary, to the hazard boundary, and it can tell us how long it's going to tell. How long is it going to take for people to walk along this path?
And so do you have somebody actually physically walk it, or is it some formula, human beings walk this fast when they're stressed out?
Yeah, so we make some assumptions. We make the that we have to make this map for the all people and to be inclusive for everyone. So some people can say, oh, I can run this along this line, I can sprint, but some people... is going to take longer for some people. So we take pretty conservative assumptions that people would walk about 2 miles an hour. So it could, because tsunamis can happen in the middle of the winter. Mm-hmm. They can happen when in the middle of the night. Might be not enough lights on the street, so that...
Yeah, that's interesting. You would have to take those into account. Now, you said something made me think of the chief. People say, oh, I can run. People shouldn't be running if there's something coming, shouldn't they? Should they, like, walk safely? Otherwise, you run the chance of tripping or breaking your leg or you get all stressed out or what? Is there, like, a safety rule for this?
Well, we want people to move quickly and efficiently out of the hazard zones, but they have to take into account their own personal safety. As you said, if it's in the wintertime and it's icy, the other side of this is, did the earthquake occur here where the roads are busted up, that we have fissures and cracks in the roads that you can't drive? It's one of the reasons why Dimitri and are putting the work together for how long it takes to walk out of these. Clearly, if you can drive and drive safely, you can get out much faster. But worst case scenario, the road system's no longer drivable. So you're exactly right. You just don't want to sprint through and think everything is okay in the dark. You know, if you have flashlights, if you don't, you're going to have to take your time getting out of the inundation zone. Taking your time is a conceptual thing of what's in front of me, what hazards do I have to get around, did a car overturn, is there a fire, is there a down electrical cables. You know, remember, we're talking an earthquake here, creating a lot of damage to our own infrastructure. You know, the tsunami is the secondary thing to the earthquake. So the quake hits, what damage did it occur? We're trying to get through that and the threat of this water wave coming at us.
Right. Now, we've all seen those pictures of Anchorage.
Yeah, Fourth Avenue. Yeah,
right down there. And if you're listening, you haven't seen those pictures, Google it up. I think you just Google up 1964 earthquake Anchorage, and those are the pictures that come right up because they're so dramatic. This big gap in the road there and everything, all which directions there down by Penny's, and it's just amazing.
The important thing here for our community to understand is once we get these maps out, and they are out, the actual drafts and all are out on the borough website and the city emergency preparedness website as well, that they can get access to, is to become familiar with your community, become familiar with where you are, so that if this happens, you're not thinking, oh, where do I go now? Have an understanding. Okay, my house is in the inundation zone, or my house is not. If the house is not in the inundation zone and no damage occurs to it through the earthquake, then our recommendation is to stay put in your residence. If you're in the inundation zone, whether it's your residence or your downtown shopping, down in the harbor with your fishing vessels, you need to get out. You need to get out and get out as quickly, as safely as possible and get into the safe zones. And that's where these exit points that Jack was talking earlier, these are points of the road system that we're planning on, okay, going up Mill Bay Road. You know, you come off a lower Mill Bay Road past the fire department, coming up past the post office. That line actually goes quite a ways up there now. The 64 incident, the actual inundation line, the monument's right there next to my fire station.
Right.
The new line is actually above the post office now. That's how drastically different it is. So the plan now will be, once we've come up with this is now the new lines, then we can develop our exit routes, signage that we're going to put out on the roads. I'm a proponent and pushing to do the Blue Line Project, which means physically painting blue lines on the streets so that you can physically see there's the boundary based off the science that Dimitri and his team is putting together for us.
Now, I like that idea because not only would it be right there, it's how many roads do we have? We've got just a few, so it wouldn't be all over the place. But if it was a nice, big, obvious one, people would see it on a regular basis, and it would be a reminder that to be tsunami aware, to be aware of these things. And I think maybe that's why we are so aware. I once interviewed somebody, I can't think of his name, but he ran the Palmer earthquake place. And he retired a long time ago. But he said that Kodiak has a corporate memory of the 64 earthquake. We all feel, not that we were there, but we all feel a close connection to it because so many people who were in it are still here, even all these days, you know, decades later, and that we have that sense of it. So we've always got this reminder that it's there. A blue line would just, you know, keep feeding that reminder that that's something we have to deal with here.
Absolutely. We need our community to be prepared individually, homes, having enough food to last at least 2 weeks. Backup, if they have a generator, that's great. How are you going to keep your house warm, your family warm? How are you going to feed them? That kind of thing. Because when this incident occurs, and it's not if, it's when, because we are going to get hit at some point in time, and it's not trying to be doom and gloom. It's just the nature of living on the Pacific Ring of Fire. It's going to happen. So we need to be prepared for that day. And it starts down to the individual and then works its way up to the municipalities, the borough government, the city government, the state government, and to the federal government. So we're here to help. But and ultimately, we need our citizenry to be informed and understand what their part is, because they're the primary players in this.
Now, you said something I just want to point out. You said 2 weeks worth of food. When we listen to things online, we see things, they still talk about 3 days. But that's for other parts of the country. They have better access, for one. If you think about it, how do we get our supplies? The docks and the airport. And the airport's right on the water. They would be heavily damaged. And so it would be tricky getting supplies in at all. So that 2 weeks was a different time frame than what I had heard, and I just wanted to point that out, that 2 weeks is the time amount, yes, for food and
absolutely. And if you look at the situations that have occurred in the lower 48, look at New Orleans, look at Long Island, New York, after Sandy hit them. There, you're talking New York, the largest metropolitan area in the world, and you have people that live within 15 minutes of that city, and they were starving. They were having trouble getting food. And this isn't, you know, with all the road infrastructure, airports, and all that. Here we are, a little island in the North Pacific Ocean, and it's even more of an issue for us because, exactly as you said, we can lose our docks, we can lose the airport. So it comes down to what us as citizens ourselves can do to protect our families and prepare for this, and that'll make the overall community response far better, because then we can help those who are truly in need, and then we have the community that can help support themselves for that period of time, and it takes the onus off of overwhelming the emergency services, the public services and stuff that we're trying to provide.
That sounds true. Okay, so we're running out of time here. We only have a couple minutes left. Anything we missed? Anything you want to point out? And if not, I'm going to have Jack give me those times again today so people know where and when they can go and listen to Dimitri. Okay, Dimitri's going to say something. Go ahead.
Okay, I do want to make a plug for emergency preparedness. The borough's Community Development Department has the emergency preparedness pamphlets. We also have a lot of information from the Department of Homeland Security, including emergency kit shopping lists, and one of them spreads it out over 6 months because it's very expensive. And for a family of four, imagine four breakfasts, four lunches, four dinners, and everything else that goes into the kit. It's huge. But the times for tonight's presentation is 7:30 p.m. in the public library's multipurpose room. And that will be a presentation to the city council. The presentation tomorrow is at 1:30 p.m. in the assembly chambers, and that's to the general public. Members of the LAPC will likely be there. That's probably your best opportunity for the public to ask questions.
And that's where?
That is at the borough assembly chambers at 1:30 p.m.
Okay.
And Thursday night's presentation is 6:30 p.m. at the borough assembly work session in the school district conference room. And if anybody has any questions about where those are, they can certainly give the Community Development Department a call.
So the borough assembly is having a work session in the school district conference room?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure because there are different locations. Okay, we got 1 minute left. Dimitri, you had, excuse me, you had something you wanted to finish with?
Yeah, so we put inundation maps online, so everyone can take a look at them. Just Google Alaska inundation maps, and they can develop those maps for Kodiak and for the villages on the Kodiak. And everyone is welcome to go to the Alaska Earthquake Center website.
Good deal. Thank you. And I will double check. We have a emergency preparedness thing on our website, and so I will make sure that we've got that. Okay, so it's right now 1 o'clock, so thank you all. Mm-hmm. This was a lot of really good information about emergency preparedness and disaster and the map and why we're doing it, and Janelle's map drawing. That'll be really interesting to see.
This has been KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 to hear more about local issues and organizations.